Never too young to learn, never too young to lead, never too young to build, never too young to chase a dream. You, my friend, are never too young.
Welcome to the podcast Never Too Young, where student entrepreneurs talk about their experiences for the aspiring ones to learn. Sarvagya and I are your hosts, and we welcome you to a new episode of NTYR. Today, we have Tushar Tulli with us.
Tusha is a second year undergrad student at Shaheed Sukhdev College of Business Studies. A student leader in every sense, she's always led by example and has recently decided to show the way to women entrepreneurs through her startup, MyMoma. Welcome to the podcast, Tusha.
Thank you so much. I think a 12-year-old me would be really proud of this introduction. So that's really sweet of you guys to introduce me like that. And I'm looking forward to this conversation.
How politically incorrect are you planning to be?
I just don't want to land myself or my startup in trouble.
Fine then. Let's start the chatter patter then.
Yeah, sure.
So, Tusha, as a student of a 3-year course, you're going to be spending, unfortunately, a majority of your time of college at home. And you know, the offline college life has a lot of things to offer, right? From campus life to chilling after classes to working in a room with people, right? So, which is important for overall development. How do you think this Zoom college mode has impacted your learning or your development?
So I think I only spent around 7 or 8 months in my campus in the offline college life. Apart from that, I entered lockdown as a fresher and I'm going back as a third year. I hope I'll go back to college, but it's time for placements and everything. And I've grown so much. And I believe while we were in college, there was this, you know, you have this habit of seeing what everyone else is doing and you try to follow that and try to pick up what's trendy, you know. Okay, so everyone's preparing for internships, let's do that. Everyone's going for a case comp, let's go ahead and do that. But lockdown for me actually gave me some time to not get drowned in those noises and find my own voice and see what I actually wanted to do. So working with, let's say, Chatter Butter or starting MyMoma, all that happened because I had time at home to prioritize my own voice and what things I think matter to me more. And for me right now, and I think for every college student right now, we are all trying to build this self-identity and trying to just get to know ourselves, right? I don't think I know myself right now enough. And during this lockdown, one thing that I found about myself was that I just wanted to create an impact. And had I been in college right now, I might have been doing case competitions or the next cool thing every third person is doing. But because I was in this state of isolation sort of, so I had this time to really think about the things that matter to me, and then I started working on those. So development-wise, I think lockdown has been a boon for me.
Right. I mean, if the lockdown had 100 negative things, I think it had a couple of positive things as well. And the best part is that you got to spend, a lot of time with yourself. And everyone went on a journey of self-discovery, I guess.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, that's the thing. Coming back to your college life, you have been involved with an array of things, which is what we observed. Right. So all of them very diverse in nature. I read about you and you have been into debating. You won a very prestigious business case competition. You are involved with a production house in Delhi. We have also participated in a competition related to adventure sport movie making. And now entrepreneurship, obviously. So how did you stumble upon such a variety of things?
Okay, so I'll give you a bit of my background. I come from Pathankot, which is a town at best, right? It's a very small town, and till class 10 I was here only, and I didn't know what MUNs were or all these competitions or all these fancy things that you can now see me participating in. I wasn't aware of those things. We lived in a small bubble where academics were everything, and I come from a highly academic family, so my parents were also pushing me engineer, doctor, commerce is for the bad kids, sort of a way. So eventually in class 10th, I was given this option that if you chose engineering or let's say non-medical, that's science with maths, we'll send you to Chandigarh to study. However, if you took commerce, you'll stay in Pathankot. So obviously a 10th standard kid would be let's go to Chandigarh, fuck the streams, fuck all that, just go to, I'll just have fun there. And I ended up in Chandigarh, and that was more or less a jail period for me, because coaching institutes for engineering are like that. So pura my idea of having fun and masti sara zero down, and again I was studying for 2 years. And that coaching period takes a serious like tax on your brain and on your mental health, and it took on mine as well. Like a trigger warning, but I became very suicidal towards the end of like my 12th standard, and I was suicidal. I was having all these negative thoughts. So my mother actually shifted to Chandigarh to support me through that journey. But still, I was not in a very healthy mental state to pursue engineering. Despite having been selected to really prestigious colleges, I chose not to like go ahead with that. I took a drop year just to get my like mental health back in shape and just try to figure out what I want to do and sort of just get back in shape, you know, because I'd lost this identity of mine. Like I was this different girl in class 10th. What have I done? What have I become? And all those things. And then you see your classmates doing great stuff and you're like, you're sitting at home. What am I doing with life? All that. So during that like drop year, I worked on a YouTube channel. I created a very embarrassing YouTube channel, but that was the time when I started trying new things and trying to find myself and sort of give self-therapy to me. Because, you know, Indian households, when you tell them that you need therapy or help, my dad was like, what help you need? I'll give you all the help you need. Like, people come to me for guidance. Why do you want to go to a third person? You know, I'll help you out and all that. So self-therapy and journaling, and after all that, I finally got to know about Shaheed Sukhdev College during my like drop year, and the IPM and everything. All these courses that I thought that these might interest me, right? Engineering was the only reason I chose non-medical was I'd get to go to Chandigarh. So yeah. So then I finally got selected to all these courses, and then I chose CBS. I came here and I met diverse people from diverse backgrounds, and that this was the time when I wanted to make up for that drop year and for that 11th and 12th wala period where I felt that I had become very average in that rat race and I wanted to excel. So all these competitions, that was just me like trying to make an effort to figure out what I like and to discover myself and my potential. And I do have a knack for a multitude of things, and that's why I think I chose to be an entrepreneur, because as an entrepreneur, unfortunately, you have to do everything on your own. So I think this is a good culmination of everything that I like to do. So yeah, I just said yes to every opportunity that came my way.
Luckily, you look in a very good state right now. And to all the listeners who are listening to this podcast, I think one very important takeaway from what just Tusha said is that mental health is important and one should take care of the mental health. It's all right to take a break and it's all right to, you know, just leave things apart, focus on yourself. And just focus on your mental health, because if that's there, I think you can achieve everything. But if not, that's not there, things can go in a very wrong direction. So I think through this podcast, if we are able to tell the listeners that taking a break is important, I think that solves a very pressing issue in society.
Exactly. And I also write and I perform like slam poetry and all this, which started in the lockdown, by the way. So my poems are also focused on mental health and depression and anxiety. And when people respond to those things with their DMs or they share or they comment, it's good for me as a performer that people are liking it. But it actually like makes me think that so many people can relate to this. That's not good. Like, why are so many people relating to all this, you know? Because I was in a very negative space, and to see that so many people right now are actually relating to all that and are actually undergoing so many things, it's very important to normalize having like these health issues and to normalize going out and seeking help for these.
Agreed, because I think unfortunately the Indian education system does not talk about these issues, and if we normalize talking about these issues, I think we can relate to it and we don't have to talk in a much awkward manner, or we don't have to talk about this in a hush-hush manner, and we can talk about this in great detail, right?
Definitely. Also, I related to you at a very good level, because I have a very similar story. I come from a science background and I have also been a part of a IIT coaching for about like 3 months or something. And then I also took a drop year, figured out what I need to do, and stumbled upon law, which was again not the most right decision I made. But yeah, so I actually relate to a very good level, because IIT coachings are, I mean, they are personification of depression, I would say. Very, it's a rat race of another level. Not because you have a lot of smart people around, but because there is a lot of comparison happening at every level. I mean, there are rank lists going on. You just like slip out on one mark and you like slip down like 50 ranks below. I remember one of my friends telling me ki sabse acha business plan is opening a therapy, you know, therapy clinic right in front of a IIT coaching, because so many people are going to like directly go into that.
And if you put someone in that sort of atmosphere, either, I don't know, they'll jump from the sixth floor or maybe they'll get a good rank. But at what cost, dude? It's really wrong what's happening. And I was watching a documentary yesterday on Netflix on IITs. So a very interesting thing they were talking about was that, so for all the exams that we applied to or all the colleges that we applied to abroad, right? 75% of that application is convincing the college that you're sure that you're the right fit for this course, right? You have to write SOPs and all these things just to prove to them that you know you're the right fit for this course. But in India, do we really have any of those things when we choose science or maths or commerce or whatever stream that we choose? Or do we really see ourselves like going to an IIT, or do we actually see ourselves doing those things? We don't know if we are the right fit. We only go there because maybe you'll get to go to a good city like I did. That is why I chose that stream. Or maybe, you know, your parents are, you're from a family of doctors, so you have to go ahead and do that. You never really, the system is built in such a way that they don't see if that individual is the right fit for that course, or if that's something that someone really wants to do. So you end up wasting 2 years in that rat race. And then you have to take a drop year and go through all that relatives ke taunts. Itna acha college mil raha tha, ghar aake baith gayi. And even now, CBS is not well known, right? People in my state don't know about CBS. It's not very famous. So they are like, itna acha colleges mil rahe the, kahan chale gayi hai, DU mein chale gayi hai, and all that. And all that, that still goes around, right? So you just have to bear that. Just have to grow through it.
I think the IIT documentary which you're referring to is Alma Matters, right? So I was also watching it a couple of days back, and I got to know about the whole situation you were telling at that point only, that it's a three-story or a six-story building where at the first floor people sleep, second floor there is a mess, and third floor they go for the coaching. So a very pertinent question I think was raised in that documentary as well, that after going through this hellhole or shithole, as someone would say, how do you expect a student to study after getting out of it and after getting a college?
A very important thing here is that this race doesn't end. Like, you go through hell through those 2 years of preparation, and then IITs are another hell. I mean, the academic pressure is very intense. You'll find people suiciding there and you're doing whatnot. And ironically, they're the best brains of the country. They're the cream of the country.
But let's come back to you and then talk about. So just like you said, you involved yourself in a variety of things, right? So how did you manage all that from home?
So I think managing from home was easier than managing things when I was on campus, because when I was on campus, I was also going for theater workshops, because as I told you, I didn't know I could be good in theater and acting. But when I applied for society auditions and everything, then my seniors told me that you're great at acting and you should pursue this, wagera. But because I'd already chosen DepSoc as my cultural SOC, so I couldn't choose another cultural SOC. So I thought, like, let's go ahead and like do workshops and everything. So my weekends were either busy in debating or in my workshops. And then my weekdays, again, I had my practice meetings, my extracurriculars, my college studies and everything, because I wanted to maintain a decent CGPA also, because a typical Indian student. So that is it. Yeah, so it was really hectic. In fact, I remember I was living like on my hostel only. So the hostel was on campus. So I used to get like around 10-15 minutes break from meetings and everything. And that time I used to rush to my hostel and just sleep for 15 minutes. And just to get that time off for myself and then again go back to college.
Colleges as in institutions have evolved massively. I mean, there was a time when, you know, institutions like prestigious institutions like IITs and IIMs were the center of, you know, all kinds of societies and stuff like that. Whereas nowadays you will find every other college having so much apart from the curriculum, and people are so much, you know, involved.
I think college classes become the least important part of your college life, like in terms of your growth also, and in terms of the time that you give. Yeah.
And considering how they teach in India, I think it should be actually the least important thing on your priority list. The pedagogy here is pretty fuck all.
Like, if I have grown, that growth has been because of my societies or all the extracurriculars, because I studied only for one semester when it was offline. After that, I haven't studied anything. That's really sad, but I don't even remember the names of the subjects that I've had this semester. So everything that I've learned till now has been either through my own efforts, like online courses or YouTube, or like by virtue of being part of so many societies, because you get to do so many things in that. You have to take on responsibility. You have to develop certain skills to do certain tasks. And you're also managing like members now that you're in your second year or third year. You manage people in first year and like you allocate responsibilities and all that. So you learn so much that actually helps you in practical life. But what you're learning in classroom right now, I don't think that's going to be of help to me, like even a year down the line. So all the skill sets that really matter to me as an individual or to a company that would hire me or a company that I would build, those are developed by like these societies or whatever efforts you put outside the classroom. So like I'll give you an example. So I was interested in entrepreneurship. So I joined CEO, which is Collegiate Entrepreneurs Organization, and Enactus. So I eventually left Enactus because my ideas of social entrepreneurship didn't coincide with whatever was actually happening there, right? So I left it and then eventually I built my own thing. But just to be a part of those things, you actually learn what's happening there. How do people think? How do they make business plans? How do they do their marketing? Everything. I wasn't even aware about Google Docs and like all these things. I didn't know how to use them. I didn't know they even existed. So all that I learned through college societies, and all that's given to me by college societies, yeah, 100%. And in debating also. So all my weekends went like for debating, and my public speaking skills, which still need work, and like developing an argument and like reading up and everything, that's all credits to DepSoc for that. And you also develop a very useful alumni network, because in CBS especially, you'll relate more to a senior when they are a part of a certain society that you're a part of, not just because they are a CBS alumni. So that's also one thing. And then you have people who are getting placed somewhere or going to IIM Ahmedabad and all that. So that's also like a great way when you're in the same society, you can like just PM them. And because you were just talking to them the day before and just chilling with them, and now they're in IIM Ahmedabad. So, you know, so all these things do add up and they do actually play to your advantage.
So one way I want to pick up this one thing, you said you were a part of CEO, which was Collegiate Entrepreneurs Organization, right? Which is a very established organization. It has been supporting student entrepreneurs for years now, I guess. So, and you were a part of the Delhi University chapter, right?
I'm the president of that, yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
It wasn't supposed to sound like a flex, but yeah.
Yeah, so my question is, how potent do you think is the startup culture in DU? What's the kind of college, you know, support colleges provide when it comes to startups? Like, what's the level of conduciveness?
Yeah, so to be honest, I can only talk about my college, because in our college, startup culture is highly encouraged. Every third person in my college is a CEO or a, you know, Sasta founder of some XYZ organization that they've maybe built just for the CV, whatever reasons. But startup culture is highly encouraged in my college. We also have like SIFE, which basically provides funding to whatever startups you're building and all that. So that way, our college environment is very encouraging for startups and young entrepreneurs and everything. But I don't know about other colleges in DU, but most of the network that I have of entrepreneurs, most of them are either from IITs or from Delhi University. So that does speak a lot about the startup culture that we have in DU. So even right now, when I was recruiting freshers for CEO, it was so good to like just see them being so excited about their own little ventures and their ideas, that although they aren't pursuing them right now, they've got drowned in case comps and stuff, but they wanted to build something, like almost all of them wanted to build something. I have this idea, I want to do this, I want to do this, and make it big. Just to have that like aspiration also talks a lot about the startup ecosystem that we have right now.
Yes, indeed. I think it is very important to have that entrepreneurship culture, which is again missing in a lot of colleges. And if you say that we come from a law background, law and business background, and unfortunately, the law schools also do not have a big culture of entrepreneurship. But I think that culture should be fostered, because even if you do not have an enterprise years on the line, it teaches you a lot of essential skills in life which ones need. So I think having an entrepreneurship culture is very important. It helps you to build on certain skills. It helps you to build on certain strategies which you want to follow in life. It helps you to think, have a futuristic approach and work on yourself.
I think, so when you're part of a society, you're kind of obliged to do things and you might not do them with full heart or you might procrastinate. But when you're building something of your own, you can't shrug off burden. You can't put it off till tomorrow. So you develop a work ethic, and a lot of skills that you won't know that you need to develop, you start developing, right? So I was always putting off graphic designing and Photoshop, like Canva se kaam chal raha hai. But when I was working for my mama, I didn't get anyone who had time to build the logo. So then I had to do all the research, and then I had to develop that skill for my startup because I knew nobody else is going to now come and do this for me. So there are certain things that you have to then learn and then have to develop for your startup, whether you like it or not. And that is when you actually start growing. And when you start making time for things that you won't necessarily enjoy, that's when the real growth happens, right? When you are literally pushed off the cliff and you have to jump out of your comfort zone because now your name is associated with something and you have to make it big. You just can't procrastinate.
Exactly, because before actually putting in some work, it's all about, just words, mere words. And just like people say that you won't actually learn swimming without stepping into the water. So you talked about a work ethic, and I read an interview of yours which said that there was a RIP strategy, which is read and learn, interact and participate, right? That is a strategy which you have followed throughout. So tell us something about it.
All right. So I've always been an avid reader ever since, I don't know, I was in third or fourth standard. I've always loved reading because my father loves to read. So he prepared for IAS and everything. So I have all these history books and everything, which I've been reading since fifth standard, all this heavy history written by Nehru and all these things. So I've always loved reading. And I think the one thing that has made me stand out in DU also, despite the lack of extracurricular activities and everything, is that I love to read. And I love to like gain whatever knowledge that I can. I love to read like fiction, like non-fiction, anything, yaar, anything. I love consuming content, as I told you the other day. It could be like books, it could be podcasts, it could be videos, it could be a documentary, it could be a show called The Bold Type. It could be anything, right? So that really helps you build your knowledge and to gain perspective. So I just read this interesting quote that reading a book is like interacting with great minds, right? How often? I won't get to meet Nehru, right? But when I read his books, it's so interesting to this is like to understand that this is how he used to think. Or when I read books by Barack Obama or Michelle Obama, I love both of them. So when I read their books, it's like I'm having a conversation with them directly. Like they're directly guiding me that, Tushar, you should do this because we did this, right? So these things really help you build perspective and understand. And so if I want to be like that person, what better way to talk to them? And what better way to talk to them than to like read a book that they've written or like an autobiography of theirs or something on similar lines. So that is why I encourage everybody to read as much as you can, right? And to consume useful content that you think is going to help you progress or might just help you relax also, whatever. But consume things because you have multitude of platforms right now from where you can learn so much, right? And you don't need to be in a great college to do that. You don't need to have a great course to do that. I might be in a commerce-centric college right now, but I can still go ahead and learn so much about engineering or graphic designing or medical, whatever, because you have multitude of sources, right? You just have to have that will to go ahead and read up stuff and like consume information. or relevant to whatever your interests are. Second is interaction. I think once you interact with people, you get something that you don't already know. Because whatever I already know, I am already doing, right? Until the time I don't interact with someone else or talk to someone else, I won't get to have that second opinion or what else everyone else is doing, right? If this apparently cool senior who got a cool placement, who got into a cool MBA college, if you don't interact with that person, you won't get to learn how he did that. Or you won't get to, and this is going to sound wrong, but you also need to network with these people, right? Because like eventually you'll always need favors from people. So you have to interact to build that meaningful relationship and to develop meaningful connections with people. That's so important right now. And while I may not like hyperactively interact with people on LinkedIn, like randomly just message them, and that's a great thing to do, but I don't think I can do that. But a lot of people do that, and a lot of people have gotten internships through like that process. So once you start interacting with others, like, that can do wonders for you, because you can learn from them. Even if you don't like to read, go ahead and read people, interact with them, try to understand their point of view, like have debates with them and all that. So yeah, so that's what I say, that my favorite book is Humans. There's no better way to learn. Like, you can just learn so much from a human, right? You learn so much from everyone, and like you learn how to solve their problems, how they solve their problems, what their perspective is on things. So interaction in that sense, and participation. By participation, I meant participation in competitions and events, because once you develop all these skills, you need to know where you rank, right? Where are you in the larger like scheme of things, or as compared to a second or third person in DU or across India? It's important to know where you stand, right? You can't remain in your own little chamber or your own little well that main to bilkul cool dude hu, maine itne sare courses kar liye and all that. You have to put those things to test. And in competitions also, when you participate, you learn so much, you develop so many skills, you meet with so many people. So I think by participation, it's like a culmination of both reading and interaction, because all those things happen here in competitions where you get to learn so much and get to meet so many people. And if you win like one or two competitions, I don't think that's a harm. That's also a great thing.
Yeah, it's indeed a very good strategy. I mean, would love to inculcate it, but read and learn is a difficult part for me. I can't read. I think that goes for both of us. We can't read long form content. I mean, the last novel I read was like probably Naughty or something. So yeah, good strategy, but I think I would focus more on the learn, interact and participate part, and read maybe short form content. Now coming to, you know, your entrepreneurial journey and your entrepreneurship life. So you are an entrepreneur for entrepreneurs. How did that happen?
So it's very interesting again. So I'll tell you, I wasn't a part of an actress back then. I was interviewing for an actress. And in the last round, they told me that, okay, so Tvisha, you say you are very spontaneous and all that, so give us like a B plan right now. So I'd worked with, I'd helped prostitutes in the past with an AIDS project and everything. So they told me that build a model around that. And I really badly wanted to get into an actor. So I was like, I have to think of something. So I came up with an idea then that prostitutes have knack for beauty skills, right? They know how to do threading and waxing and all the beauty services, right? So I was like, we can have a van of sorts. So the thing is that these women have that skill. And for college going girls like me, we can't afford to go to expensive beauty parlors and pay large amounts. And we don't have the time also to like hunt for a parlor, go there and all that. So we can have moving vans where these prostitutes will actually provide those services to us. They can go to colleges and they can, like an ice cream van, this would be that beauty parlor wala van. And in DU specifically, because girls are very woke there and they won't be apprehensive to the idea of like having work done by a prostitute. They won't really be apprehensive to that. And I assume they won't be very judgy also. So this was my idea and they really loved it. And at that time, I didn't realize that it was an awesome idea. So after a few months, they actually told me that they are actually planning to pursue this idea, which I had during my interview round. So then I thought that maybe this idea actually is really nice. That is why this organization wants to pursue it. However, they didn't pursue it. But then I was like, I'll talk to my dad and I'll see if I can actually implement this. But it did involve a lot of capital investment to get that van built, get all those services built in and all that stuff. So I got really demotivated that this was my one chance to get that founder thing written on my LinkedIn, and now it's also gone. Now I can't have this startup. So lockdown started and everything, and then three, four people I knew, they became co-founders and all that. And I was getting so much BT from all this ki meko sabse pehle idea aaya tha, mera kuch bhi nahi ho raha hai. And then I was like, ki mujhe aur koi ideas bhi nahi aa rahe abhi. And all that. Then I talked to my father also, ki kya ho raha hai, papa, meko, I want to build something. I want to have something of my own. And by the time third year starts, I won't get time to build anything because I'll be busy with placements and everything. So I was constantly thinking every day that ek idea aaye to sahi, kuch to aaye, jisme capital na lage, kuch bhi lage. But you never get ideas when you start thinking like this, ki idea to aaye. I got a lot of random ideas, but nothing that could be executed. So I just stopped thinking. I started preparing for GMAT and focused on my like studies, etc. And then like one fine day while I was sleeping, and I get all my ideas while I'm sleeping, I got this idea that, bro, you want to make an impact, right? That is what you want to do. And what are the skills that you have right now? And I was like, yeah, I can guide someone. I have developed all the skills by being part of so many societies. I know how to help someone build a business and all that. And being a dyed-in-wool feminist, I was like, why not help women entrepreneurs? They really need that, because that's a gap that exists right now. And if you see the numbers also, India ranks 70th among 77 countries when it comes to female entrepreneurship. And like our labor participation rate for women is also around 18%. While for men, it's around 75%. So it was a really bad state of affairs. So I was like, why don't I intervene in that? I'll make an impact. I'll have this something of my own. And I'll eventually try to make that bus wala idea. That's still my like end game, that I want to build that van and have all that. So this is how I started. And the name, My Moment of Makeover, was basically for that bus wala idea. But I thought that it like seemed to fit for this also. My mama seemed to fit for this idea also, that I'm giving makeovers to businesses right now. So last year in June, I got this idea. And after that, I approached a couple of people, but all of them were already part of startups. So they were really busy. Second year students are really busy. So again, I was like, I'll wait for first years to come and then I'll recruit people. Till December, I waited to implement this idea. And then in Jan, when finally freshers came, so then I started recruiting them for my startup, and then we started working. And touch wood, we have got such a good response. We've had so many people approach us, and you know, there's nothing better than waking up every day and knowing that you're making someone smile because of the work you're doing. So I like, whatever clients I work with, especially mothers, most mothers are running this, like most of our clients are mothers. So the smile that they get on their face when we like present a solution, or when just in our first meeting also, when we talk to them and we try to like tell them ki hum aunty solution nikal denge, ye ye problems hai, easily we'll get a solution for that. And they get so happy, and it's just, I can't explain it in words, the kind of joy that you feel like your work is bringing to other people. It's just out of this world.
So my mother is actually also a home chef. She started recently. So since your main target segment is mothers, like you said, I've noticed that the elder people particularly are sometimes skeptical about technology. You know, they don't know how to use technology and they are sometimes skeptical about it too. So, and in today's world, a majority of the business is online. How are you tackling that barrier?
Okay, so most of them have this problem. They don't know how to market on social media. And just yesterday, I was talking to a woman entrepreneur who's running this startup that's called Handy Rasoi. And they make these paratha mixes, pancake mixes. So she was like that, my daughter is handling the social media, but she's also very busy. She's an architect and she doesn't get time to like do this regularly. And when I try to do it, mujhe kehte itni English nahi aati hai ki main English mein captions likhun jaise wo likh rahi hai, ya main graphics wagera banau. So for that also, we're trying to find and connect them to college going or student going volunteers who would work for them and would get that certificate, and they'll be happy for that. Just to get like social media, humne manage kari and volunteer kiya. Students would be happy with that and she'll get her work done. So that's how we try to like connect people. But apart from, I think the technological challenges, which are uniform for like across genders in the 40 plus age group, the access to finance is something that women entrepreneurs really like struggle with, right? A, they don't have collaterals. Why? Because they don't get property rights, right? At least in reality. On paper, they might, but in reality, they don't get those property rights. B, they aren't really aware of the schemes that are going on right now, or like benefits that they can avail via government schemes or like the UNDP, etc., etc. So that is what we are also trying to bridge, right? We have made a database of certain funds they can get, certain support they can get from the government, certain competitions they can participate in, certain like fairs they can participate in to get those much needed funds that they need for their startups. So that's really a big struggle for women entrepreneurs, getting that finance, because even informal sources are not really available for women because no one takes them seriously. No one takes, like, if a mother is planning to start something, everyone A would discourage them that tumhare to bacche hain, tumhare ko ghar sambhalna hai, husband sambhalna hai, sab sambhalna hai. So why do you want to start something? B, even if they somehow overcome all those things and they plan to implement something, they will be stopped by everyone because you won't get the money only. No one is going to take your idea seriously. They'll think, ki, ye kaise manage karegi itni cheezon ke saath, or she doesn't have the skill set to do something. So nobody wants to part with their money, especially when it comes to a woman entrepreneur who's not being taken seriously and who people assume won't be able to run something successfully. So they don't get money from formal sources as well as informal sources.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually tough for women entrepreneurs because I think a lot of, you know, when you're starting out as an entrepreneur, let's say if I, as a man, I have 100 units of energy. So probably if my parents are not that supportive, I'll be spending maybe 10 to 15 units of that energy in actually tackling my family. Whereas as a woman, that energy which will go into tackling family and other societal pressures, it's going to be pretty high, like somewhere probably like 25, 30 or something. So a lot of your time gets consumed there, and then it's not, I mean, the environment is pretty much not very conducive when it comes to, you know, women entrepreneurs as of now. I mean, still, although we're evolving, we're going in the right direction. I would like to believe so. But still, I think it's somewhat, you know, difficult for women to thrive as an entrepreneur in the contemporary times. Which brings me to a very important question. That, you know, despite a lot of improvements in social parameters, India's growth does not really talk about development and economic inclusion of women. And when we talk about empowerment, I believe entrepreneurship is actually a good, very good way of empowerment. So, I mean, how important do you think is, you know, gender integration in entrepreneurship?
I think it's really important. I don't remember, like, which... who published this report, but according to this report, around 170 to, I don't know, 180 million jobs can be created by women entrepreneurs in India by 2030. So that's a huge economic benefit, right? We want to employ more people. And when more women entrepreneurs will establish their businesses, they'll like employ more women in their businesses, so that like bring more people, like women, into the folds of development, and that may be economic development, that may be closing on the gender gap, that may be any form of development, but that's development for this group that has been like isolated for so long and that has been really like underestimated for so long, to the extent that women are actually conditioned to not believe in themselves and not be very like confident in their own abilities. So many studies have proven that men tend to like overestimate their abilities, whereas women tend to underestimate their abilities even when they have the same skill set. So that's how much we are conditioned, right, as women, that we don't believe in our own skill sets. And even if we start believing, there are again 10 million hurdles that we have to cross with no one else to really help us. And the number of people that we can look up to, the number of examples that we have, that's also very less when you compare it to the number of men who are in positions of, let's say, in a position to inspire others, right? Very few women are there. So we have a long way to go. And there's no harm in having a woman who would do great, right? She'll bring in more opportunities. She'll like help develop the country. She'll generate more jobs that'll develop you economically and in every sense. So I don't think there is any harm, except that you'll finally have someone you'll have to compete with. You'll have an equal person to compete with.
I think there are no harms associated with a woman leading a business. We have a perfect example of a woman leading a country. And even though there are arguments that the population is not there enough in New Zealand, but I think she's doing a commendable job. And I think even the male leaders like that of India or other countries should learn from her, right? So how do you think we can actually level the playing field for women?
Okay, so I, as an individual, I am trying to do that because the gaps that I thought like existed, they needed that advice, they needed help with their finances and their marketing. That's where I'm trying to intervene and give them that advice, right? So once women start building their businesses, they'll have a source of finance. They can probably help other communities of women, right? Help. They can give them, help them with their finances further. So it'll create a really beautiful, I'd say, butterfly effect for those people. So if we have more women in like positions of responsibility and positions of power, we will generate more women who will eventually be able to reach to these positions comfortably. So as an individual, this is what I am trying to do, trying to fill in the gaps, trying to fix my own thinking. Because as a girl, I do come from a family where I wasn't ever like made to feel that I am being treated differently or my brother is being treated differently. But there are small things that happen, like which really like pinch you when you grow up and you realize that all these things happen, right? So you start internalizing these things. So as a society, as individuals, we first need to work on our own conditioning and really try to like unlearn a lot of things that we have learned growing up and try to, as women, start believing in our capabilities, right?
I think that's very correctly stated, that as a society, we should do this, because at the end of the day, people say that your mind is your biggest asset. But I would also say that your mind can also be the biggest demotivator, because ultimately it can be the very thing which drags you down. Because once you lose yourself in your own thoughts, and if they're in a very negative way, you start doubting yourself, you start undermining yourself, and that hampers your self-confidence, your reality and everything in a very negative manner. And you just stop participating in things, you stop doing anything. You just stand like a doll or a stuffed toy after that. At whatever you're being told, you do that. You do not dare to think outside outside of what you're being told. But having said that, I think now is the time for a very exciting part of the podcast, the Never Too Quick Round. Just like you guys raise funds, we raise questions. Answers for these can never be quick enough, but we can surely give it a try. So, Tusha, the first question would be, if a biopic was made on your life, what would you name it?
I want to say Becoming, but Michelle Obama's, I think, biopic is already, autobiography is already called that, but something on similar lines.
Who is your favorite woman leader in business?
I think we do not have a lot of examples right now or who I can say that, yeah, this is what I want to be, but probably Radhika Gupta.
One word for DU.
Overhyped.
If given a choice, what would you choose? Fortune or fame?
Fortune, because if I have good fortune, I'll eventually know how to get my way to fame.
Yeah, smart choice. If you had the chance to interview one poet, who would it be?
I'd like to interview my own self, because I want to get to know my own self. Yaar. I don't know who I am till now. So yeah.
What is the toughest decision you took in the pandemic?
Whether to start with my mama or not, because I was afraid people would start judging me, that I've also joined the cult of LinkedIn entrepreneurs and co-founders, but still I took that leap. And again, I'm now trying to make my Instagram account public and make like reels around business and stuff. So that's also a decision I'm yet to make, but that's going to be a hard one.
See, I don't know much about it, but I think you should, if you believe in it, you should go for it. As in, all the external noise should be muted if you're doing such a good deed.
I really wish we have more people like you.
So, what is the best part about content creation, according to you?
I think you get to explore your creativity and you get to put to use things that you would think are usually like things people do for time pass or chilling. So if I consume content on Netflix or Amazon Prime, or if I watch a movie, I'm using that to create content for Chatterbutter. I'm using that to write reviews. So those are things which you don't usually think would really like be of purpose or serve a purpose or like impact people or anything, but you can in content creation, you can like find out ways to like utilize those things to your benefit and to impact other people. So yeah, that freedom.
Got it. If you had to dedicate a poem or a song to my mama, which one would that be?
That's a great idea for me to write a poem right now for them, for that. But I can give a line for my mama. That's from Chak De India's song, Aaj To Koi Zid Fadi Hai.
Oh, and even, in fact, the topic of the movie also relates to your cause. So the next question is, imagine the police has arrested you. What, according to you, would be a crime?
I probably spoke a bit too much, revealed too many names about things I shouldn't have.
If someone reads your journal or diary someday, what's that one thing he or she would be surprised to know?
Okay, so I started writing a diary specifically for my future kids, if I have any. So I title it as Dear XX and XY, because like if you had bio then you would understand. So that's basically just to like share my struggles and stories with them, so someone would be amused that what kind of pathetic person is she. She's referring to her future kids, and this is how she's referring to them, like as chromosomes basically. So yeah, that would be weird.
This is actually very surprising.
And if the second child was also an XX or vice versa, he would be very disappointed that you did not mention him.
It's like XX slash XY. So it's just for one kid, if I have any. So that one child would get that diary.
Like, this looks like Kuch Kuch Hota Hai ka plot.
Oh God. I wish my life was that interesting, but no.
Okay. So here's the last question, Tusha, which we ask everyone. So what are the changes you suggest in the Indian colleges to foster the culture of entrepreneurship among students?
I think all colleges should definitely have like an incubation center like we have SIFE for startups, and to encourage that and to not really be judgmental for someone who wants to pursue things outside of the curriculum that you're offering, outside the academic sphere that you're offering, and provide them help with that. Like my college does, that's a great example for what we can do. We can have startup chapters across colleges and encourage that culture, because that's really going to help us build a better country when we have more people who are creating better job opportunities and who are trying to innovate. And only then we'll have examples also for students to look up to and like have someone, I want to become like this person from my college. So encourage that, have like provide them with funding. Have a screening round if you want to, but provide them with the funding that they need to start something.
And that question marks the end of the Never Too Quick round. So, Tusha, what are your parting words for budding entrepreneurs?
I think for all the people who aspire to be entrepreneurs or who want to pursue entrepreneurship after their job is done or after their MBA, one common thing that we face is our own self-doubt and this belief that will our idea work out or not. And the only way for you to know that is once you start actually working on that idea. So if you have that idea, do not waste time. Go ahead and pursue it while you're still young and while you still can afford to take risks and not have like family burdens and all of these burdens of sorts that you might have when you're 30 or 30 plus. So while you're young, go ahead, take risks, do whatever crazy shit you want to do.
This, I think, marks the end of this wonderful episode. Thank you, Tusha, for being a part of this.
Thank you for having me.
Yep, that's our college bell. Need to head back to classes, but these stories and conversations won't stop. See you soon with the next episode of Never Too Young. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.